and welcome to On Wednesdays We Watch One Tree Hill, the podcast where a bunch of nostalgic millennials sit around and talk about a TV show from the early 2000s that they either grew up with or have never seen before in their entire lives. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Brody, and with me, as always, is Jesse.
It's hot toddy season, folks.
And Caitlin.
Hi.
And today we are talking about season 4, episode 18 of One Tree Hill, titled The Runaway Found, which, fun fact, is a song by The Vales.
I don't know them.
I know of them, so that works. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Someone does.
Yes. So we open with not the opening credits. It is a black title screen because there is too much to do this episode, apparently, to have Gavin DeGraw.
No time for Gavin. Sorry.
No time for Gavin. Sorry,
we
friends.
We still love you.
Yes. So we open on Lucas knocking on what we think is Abby's door. And there's a voiceover that he does. And a woman answers the door and tells him that there is no Abby here and that he is the wrong address and slams the door in his face. And as Lucas walks away, he sees a person move away from the upstairs window. And he's leaving. And we see that Dan watches Lucas leave the house.
Dan being Dan, just being a fucking creep.
Uh-huh.
In his car.
Yes, yes. Then we go to Whitey, who gets to school, and he is bombarded by the press asking about point shaving. And Whitey tells the press that these are the best boys he's ever coached, and they are champions, not cheaters, every single one of them. Okie dokie. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay, like integrity in sports. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Get it. But like, he wasn't like doping. He wasn't like, and they still won. The team that was winning.
But
the
see,
whole...
Jesse, betting has to do with not only winning or losing the game, it's by how many points.
Yeah.
That so it's gambling, and you can't do that in college or professional sports. That's illegal.
Right. I'm just confused by the language choice of cheating. Because, like, no one cheated to win that game. People were point fixing. I understand that.
I'm pretty sure that was alliteration more than anything else. So we can let the cheaters thing go.
I don't think
it
I
also
can.
It also just, like, digs the nail in a little bit deeper that he defended them so hard.
Right. No, yes. I understand. I understand this whole thing, like, is... Yeah, I understand the purpose of it, but I'm just confused by the language of it because I don't know sports.
It's called shitty LA writers trying to make alliterations sound good to people.
Boo, shitty LA writers.
Uh-huh. Moving on. Then we go to Nathan and Haley, who are at the River Court, and they're talking about how Nathan's going to probably lose his scholarship if they find out about Dante and everything, and he won't get to play anywhere ever again. So there's that.
Yeah.
Then we go to Peyton, who is in the shower. And she sees Psycho Derek in the shower with her. It's not traumatizing at all. It's fine. It's fine.
Not in the slightest.
Ah.
Some racy shower footage. Like,
yeah, there were some racy silhouettes here. It's like, really? Okay, hello.
For the early CW, that was some like racy, you know, side silhouette happening.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So then Brooke is walking at school when Chase skateboards almost directly into her. And Chase immediately mentions about Psycho Derek and tells her that he tried calling her. And she immediately changes the subject to him not wearing his clean teens shirt anymore. And he tells her things change. And she agrees and runs off.
Excellent.
And she immediately runs off to Peyton. And asks if she has any blood on her because she just saw Chase and it feels like she got her heart ripped out.
Aw.
No. But then Peyton asks if she looks insane because she saw Psycho Derek again, this time in the shower. So this is not a new thing for P. Sawyer. This has been happening for, you know, the last couple of days or however long it's been.
Honestly, that sucks for her, but I'm kind of glad to see that they're not just like... Everything's fine now. This was just a hard moment that these friends needed to go through to be friends again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I agree.
No, they actually, do a kind of a good job with this part. Yeah. And she wonders if, you know, if she saw him behind bars this time, because, you know, Brooke reassures her. She's like, no, honey, they got him. He's behind bars. He can't hurt you anymore. And she says, yeah, we thought that was the case last time. And look what happened. And she's like, maybe if I actually see him physically behind the bars, that will maybe help. And she goes to leave her locker and she turns and sees Psycho Derek again in the hallway. And she tells Brooke she'll catch up with her later. So we find out that Peyton leaves school and goes to the jail where Psycho Derek is being held. And it is so creepy and so wrong. I'm like, why are they letting this young girl just go down this row of inmates by herself? That's
no supervision.
None whatsoever.
Fine.
Yeah. Hello, shitty LA writers.
Right. Yeah. They're back.
They're back. Well, I think they never left, but never they're in peak performance this episode. Jesus. So she goes to see him and he tells her that he knew she'd come. The guards all said she wouldn't, but he knew she would. And she asks him why her. And he just keeps saying that she loves him. And she tells him she doesn't love him and she never wants to see him again. And she goes to leave and he tells her that she invited him into her life with her podcast and her webcam and her low cut tops. And she's such a tease. And he just keeps yelling at her that she's such a tease. And she did this to him and she denies it and is obviously very, you know, shaken by it and leaves.
What in the gaslighting kind of bullshit,
right?
Did this man drink in jail?
Well, you know. Yeah.
Right. She's wearing like a very conservative. She's wearing like a flannel and a tank top. And he's like, look at your slutty outfit. And I'm like, what?
Yep.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing. But it gets to her, obviously. And it's a little scary to see that happen to Peyton. But yeah. Then we get Dan, who gets out a gun at his house, but immediately hides it away when Nathan just barges in. And Nathan tells his dad he's worried about the point-shaving allegations, but Dan tells him just to stay cool and deny everything and pray that no one uncovers the truth. And I immediately thought of, are we speaking from experience here, Danny boy?
Yeah, that right there, ready. That's some, like, firsthand advice happening from old Dannykins.
Yep. God. Yeah. So then we go to Lucas, who is waiting outside of the house from earlier. And when the woman leaves, who says that, you know, Abby doesn't live here, she leaves. Lucas just walks right in the front door. Gentle listeners, we are all shaking our heads going, what the fuck is this boy doing? But anyway.
Yeah. I wrote down. So Lucas is taking a page out of Dan's creeper book, like just like sitting there watching the house, letting himself in.
Yes. So he goes in and snoops around and he does find Abby there in the house and his cell phone rings and it startles her. And you can tell she's obviously shaken up. And they have a little bit of an interaction and Lucas asks her if Jimmy Edwards killed Keith and she shakes her head no. But just then Abby's mom comes home and is like, what are you doing in my house? Get the hell out. I'm going to call the police. What the hell are you doing? And he says, what? You're going to call the police so you can tell them that, you know, Abby knows who actually killed my uncle. And Abby's mom sympathizes with him about the fact that, you know, Keith was his uncle. But Abby's mother explains that Abby has been traumatized by the events of the school shooting. And, you know, she hasn't been the same since. And she then asks Abby if her name is Abby. And does she know who Abby is? And all these kind of, you know, questions that she would know. And Abby just shakes her head no the whole time. But you can kind of tell there's some attitude with it. Because you can kind of see her. She crosses her arms and things like that. But apparently Abby is so traumatized, she doesn't even know who she is anymore. And she says, she asks Lucas to leave and tells him to please never come back. Great. Great.
It's just rough. Like, I have so many issues with this whole thing and how it was. I understand that it was handled this way, you know, for the plot. But also just like, what?
Right? It's the most random, stupid thing of like, oh, wait, we found the girl. But apparently she's completely traumatized to the point of not knowing who she is or knowing what's going on in the world. Okay, sure.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so wild to me. And it's just like, and also just like Luke, you know, just casually walking into their house, like,
right,
based on what happens later in this episode. I think it's either this one or the next one. I can't remember because it's been 3 weeks since I watched this episode. And like, they're being so like the Browns are being so cautious to make sure that, like, you know, nothing bad happens, that I just can't believe that her mom left the door unlocked.
Yeah, I mean,
that's right. The most, like, that is the most wild part to me, is they're going to all this trouble to act like Abby's fucking crazy, and her mom left the front door unlocked.
Right, right.
Well, yeah. And left the door unlocked when she left Abby home alone.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm.
That to me is like the wildest part of this entire thing, is like Lucas was able to just walk right in.
Well, yeah. And later in the episode, so, you know, other people are able to walk.
We get more explanation as to what's going on and everything later on. So we can talk more about it then. But it's wild. It's weird and I don't like it, but whatever. Then Lucas gets home to find Haley in his room, and Haley asks Lucas if Nathan is right about this point shaving thing and that it's just going to all go away. And Lucas is like, hell no, it's not. What the hell? No, Haley, it's Haley, serious.
You're the smartest person in this town. What do you think?
She doesn't know sports. It's understandable.
Right. Okay.
Yes. So Lucas says it's not going to go away because, you know, they're looking at Lucas hardcore right now, but he's just a reserve. He only played 15 minutes a game. No one is going to do a point shaving scheme around him. And once they're done looking at him, they're going to look elsewhere and they're going to end up on Nathan. And Haley's like, how bad is this going to get? And Lucas tells her, well, Nathan won't go to jail, but he won't be going to Duke either.
Yep.
Yeah. So then Peyton is laying in bed and she turns over and guess who's there? Derek again. And she wakes up from her nightmare and Brooke comes in and Peyton tells her she went to go see Ian, which we find out is Derek's real name. So we will be using Ian from now on.
Scary Ian. It's not
Derek.
It's Ian. Scary Ian. Yes. Yeah.
And Brooke says, yeah, I know his name's Ian. And we find out that she's been clipping out all the newspaper articles about the attack. And Peyton's like, oh, I thought you were just clipping coupons. And Brooke's like, oh, honey, I know, but I hate coupons.
Who on God's green earth would think that Brooke Penelope Davis is clipping coupons? Even right? At her poorest, she was more willing to steal charity money than clip coupons.
Right?
Steal charity money and sell her blood.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Then clip a coupon.
I not even steal charity money. Create a fake charity.
Yeah. Right. I have only been watching this episode for like almost 2 years now, and I understand that. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, just then, as they're talking about that, the front door opens and they're home alone and they're like, did you lock the door? And Brooke's like, yeah, I did. And it's a really scary, tense moment as they look down the hallway and find that it's just Haley waddling in. Cause that's what Haley does. Now she just waddles cause they've got her so big, fat, pregnant right now. She
Lest
blew up
we
like,
forget. There is like, a there's a moment in next week's episode that you see it cuts from Haley pregnant Haley to Karen pregnant Karen, and they got pregnant around the same time. We know this. They are in different trimesters. They are.
Yes, it makes no goddamn sense. But hilarious. Like I said, from like here on out, Haley just looks like the Goodyear blimp and she just waddles everywhere. Poor thing. Well, it's fine.
She looks like final days of pregnancy. Like,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For, I'm assuming, the next 4 months.
Or, you know, maybe at least until the end of the season. So we got a couple of weeks. But yeah. God. So it's just Haley, and she apologizes. She's like, I'm sorry, I have a key. I just wanted to check on you guys. And she climbs in bed with the other two, and they're hanging out. And Peyton just says, I used to love my room, and he took that from me. And she says that she thought confronting him would make this all go away, but it hasn't. And she's like, what am I supposed to do? I can't sleep. I have finals. I have all this stuff. And Brooke's like, okay, then you have a best friend who tells you that, yes, life gets really hard sometimes, but one day you're going to realize that you're stronger than you seem and that you're a warrior. We all are. And all three of them give a little kumbaya thing of, you're a warrior. No, you're a warrior. No, you're a warrior. And it's really cute. And it's fun to see the three of them be besties.
Everybody is a warrior.
Exactly. 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 Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So then we go to Lucas, who comes over to Whitey's house. And Whitey answers the door and says that he was waiting for a booty call. Damn. Get it, Whitey. Or the man was joking or not, get it, Whitey.
I hope Whitey has 7 booty calls a day. Like, that man deserves it.
A day?
A day.
Wow.
The only word that's in my brain right now is proficient, and that is not the word I want for this situation.
Moving on swiftly from that tangent, for the love of God. Lucas tells Whitey that the point shaving was all him. And Whitey says that he took a chance on him because of Keith, and he would be ashamed of him right now, kind of like how he is, and shuts the door in Lucas's face. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But is Whitey ashamed of Lucas for point shaving, or is he ashamed of Lucas for lying?
Well, I think at this point, it's point shaving. The next scene, which is Whitey looking at that game footage from the semifinals, he sees Lucas, when he's getting ready to shoot that free throw, look over at Nathan before he misses it. And Whitey also sees a very guilty look on Nathan's face. And Whitey immediately knows what happened.
Yeah. And also the very subtle nod
that
Nathan gives Lucas.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. But Whitey can't miss that because, you know, Whitey
is their father.
Pretty much. Yeah. So then the next day, Whitey goes to visit Nathan at the river court. And Whitey asks him about the point shaving and tells him that, you know, Lucas's name, it's a shame. It won't be worth a damn when this is all said and done. And immediately we cut to Nathan barging into Lucas's house and asking him, why did you lie about the point shaving? And Lucas is like, I think the words you're looking for are, you're welcome. But Nathan's like, no, it was stupid. But Lucas is like, I don't care, because it's going to get you to your dreams and Haley's going to be all good. And I don't care what people say about me. I care more about what people say about Jimmy and Keith. And at least he knows the truth about this thing. And Nathan's still really upset with him and leaves. So that solved a lot. Not at all. Then. Yep. Then Brooke wakes Peyton up the next day and reminds her that they are warriors and that he kicked Ian's sorry ass. And so they're going to have a really good day today. And Peyton tells Brooke about that when she saw Ian, that he told her that she led him on and this was all her fault. And Brooke, being the queen that she is, says, does this mean that every girl who wears a little bit of lipstick and a short skirt is asking to be assaulted?
The answer
to that is no.
Good job, Brooke.
Exactly. Yes.
Feminist icon Brooke Davis. She's
God
back.
Love it. Yes.
She's back.
Yes.
Feminist icon Sophia Bush.
Yes. Yes. So that's. Yes. And Peyton says no, but she did give him access to her life and he used it against her. And Brooke's like, fine, then let's find out more about him. And she grabs her laptop and goes in the living room. And she also, this entire time, there's a running joke about P. Sawyer, get up and take a shower because you stink, which is hilarious. Yeah. Then we get Dan buying some ammunition at a store somewhere. And the clerk asks him if he just wants the ammo because they just got this brand new handgun in. And if he's got his handgun license, he could buy it today.
I hate the South.
I hate honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he gives Dan this gun to, you know, look at and try out and blah, 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 in the middle of the fucking store. And Dan points the gun just randomly at the store and ends up pointing it at a little girl holding a doll. And the girl, like, looks at him, drops the doll, and runs away.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, as what she the should. Fuck?
Even what if it's, the... even if, like, it's not loaded, she don't know that.
No. It's just, it was,
But also, why the fuck are you bringing your six-year-old to the gun store?
I don't think it's a gun store. Is it a fucking Walmart? I think it's like a fucking Walmart or like an Orschlins or something like that. That's like a farm surplus whatever store shit. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. It's got to be one of those things because there were like rows of clothes and shit like that. It wasn't just a gun store.
I mean, they sell hunting stuff at the gun store.
Yeah, but there was, I mean, I looked at it and it was more than just like camouflage stuff. Like, yeah, this was not a gun store. This was not a gun store.
But that's just like, all I can think of is like just the fact that like.
Why do you bring your child to a gun store? Sweetie, where is this show located?
I mean, I know it's this fucking South. I'm aware. I live here.
I'm just like, saying.
It's fucking South. And it's like the fact that if this is, you know, not a gun store. I also can't get over the fact that we're calling it a gun store.
Is that not what they're called?
No, they have a real name.
Oh, I don't.
I just can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
He went to the Walmart.
Right.
Yeah. But my point being, even at the Walmart, like, I don't think realistically he should be able to buy a non-hunting gun.
This is true.
Which is why I'm confused that it's not a gun store.
Can we chalk this one up to stupid LA writers again?
Yes, because I was about to say, I'm not about to get into a conversation about what guns can or can't be sold in the United States of America. Fuck that.
Shitty LA does writer, not exist.
No, we're not having that conversation.
Shitty LA writers, moving on. Peyton and Brooke are now looking up info about Ian Banks is his full name. Ian Banks. When Peyton starts to ask her about Chase, and Brooke says she thinks about him a lot and then wonders if he left because of the tape or if it was just a good reason for him to leave, and her self-doubt starts creeping back in that she had. Then Brooke finds Ian. Turns out he is actually from Texas, and she says that his girlfriend looks just like Peyton if she were dead.
Ian tried his hardest. Sorry to go back, but I just read a note that I did not say out loud while we were talking about Whitey looking at the basketball video.
Yes
I said his inner monologue is absolutely, damn it, I made those brothers bond too hard.
Yes.
That's all. Back to
yep.
back
this is to not Ian. What I meant when I said I wanted y'all to get along.
Facts.
I abandoned those teenage boys on the side of busy or dead rural highways one too many times.
Right? Yes. I abandoned them on sides of highways. I made them bunk together at hotel rooms one too many times. God damn it. This is my fault. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, sorry. Moving on. You're good.
Yeah. Back to, oh God.
Now we're back to Danny Boy sitting there unhinged in a church loading a gun. What the hell is this episode?
He's just like, he's truly unhinged.
Yes. Like, yes. This is the episode where Dan becomes completely unhinged and falls apart. Exactly.
He's falling apart at the seams because he's realizing the jig is up. Like, it is only a matter of time until Lucas figures it out.
Well, until anyone figures. Yeah. I mean, especially Lucas.
Well, I think because he realizes that Abby is an actual person. Like, it's just. Right. Yeah. Right. It's not just someone giving him a hard time. He now understands that, shit, someone does know what's going on.
Right.
Knows what's going on and truly witnessed it.
Yeah. So he's sitting in a church loading a gun. Not dramatic at all, shitty LA writers. Like, what the hell? So then speaking of Abby, we go to Abby, who talks to her mom and tells her she wants to tell someone what she saw. She's tired of hiding out and pretending that she's crazy. Her mom forbids it and tells her that once they have enough money, they can leave. But for now, they have to lay low and just, you know, lay low and not even go outside or anything. And Abby's tired of not having a life and goes to leave. But when she opens the door, guess who's standing there? Dan. With his bag of guns.
just a brown paper bag of guns.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck? So Dan is very frantic and definitely like on the edge, like we said, and he tells them both, he barges into their house and tells them both to sit down. And Dan tries to tell Abby that she didn't see anything, but Abby, Queen Abby that she is, doubles down and says, oh no, I saw everything and I know what you did. And he's like, yeah, I do too. And then he goes into this weird speech about how everyone loved Keith, especially Karen, but Karen was supposed to be his. And Abby says she hopes he burns in hell. And Dan admits that, yep, I want the same thing. And he reaches into the paper bag that he put the gun in to reveal a doll. I don't get it. I don't want to get it. What the fuck?
So he pointed a gun at a small child. Yes. He dropped her stuffy.
Yes.
And then Dan then stole the stuffy to bring as a gift to the girl who knows that he committed murder.
It makes no fucking sense, which is why I'm
what
saying
in the
shitty
Blue Radley is this man doing?
Shitty LA writers. What the fuck?
I'm sorry. We do need to leave space for what in the Boo Radley.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. That was gold, Caitlin.
Listen, that was all I could think about. Was like, what?
I mean, this may be, and this is going to, like, this may be my least favorite episode of this entire series because of how stupid it is and it's how hinged it is. It's ridiculous.
So wild. It is...
It's like, it, you know, One Tree Hill teeters on that edge. This one, I don't know who the fuck wrote this, but they were just like, let's go.
They said, we have 4 episodes left.
Right? We've done some unhinged shit this season, and we got to wrap it up somehow.
Like, oh, God. Okay, yeah. So then we go to Brooke and Peyton, who, of course, now go to see Ian, because what could go wrong there? But he immediately starts calling them both Tease 1 and Tease 2 until Brooke and Peyton tell him that they've talked to his old teachers and people from his hometown in Texas. And they start to bring up Maggie, his ex-girlfriend who died. And he gets very upset. And they ask him what happened the night of the accident. And he says, well, he was driving and it was slick and they were driving too fast and they crashed and everyone blamed him for it. And he starts to break down and Peyton tells him that she can't be Maggie for him. And he starts to break down even more. And Brooke and Peyton both say that Maggie forgives him. And Peyton says she forgives him as well. And he breaks down and starts apologizing profusely. Peyton tells him that they will never see each other again and tells him goodbye. And she hopes he finds peace.
And that, Jesse, is the true series wrap on Matt Barr.
Yes.
Good. A good. But holy forced resolution, Batman. Like, what?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, good for Peyton, you know? Mm-hmm. And based on next week's episode, I know I keep alluding to it, but it is fresher in my brain than this episode is. Based on next week's episode, it seems like she really has found closure in it, and I am so happy for her. This season has been a nightmare for people who love Peyton.
and for
Peyton, I know. Yeah. But, like, acknowledging what Brody likes to remind us is that this is a TV show. You know, it's just been hard as someone who really does enjoy the character of Peyton, like, to watch all the bullshit they keep throwing at her. So, good for her. Closure, whatever. Let's force it in there. Just really, you know, fit 25 pounds of shit in a 10-pound bag, you know, like, let's do it. Let's force that closure in there, zip it up, toss it in the river.
I think my thing with that is, though, this is the only part of the episode, like, this storyline is the only part of really this episode that I enjoy, is the closure that Brooke and Peyton get with Ian, because the whole thing is Peyton always wonders, why me? Why did it happen to me? Why was I chosen for this? Why? Right. And now we get why. It's because she looks exactly like his ex-girlfriend. Why? It's just, he's a very disturbed individual. It's a whole thing. And it's like, they took the power back that he took from them. And I think they even say, it's either this episode or next episode, that he took a lot from them, but they're going to get it back. This is just the start of that for them.
Yeah.
And even if we don't see a lot of it unfold in the show, we know that the two of them are healing after this point.
And I am glad that they did it together. I'm glad that Peyton didn't have to do it alone. And I'm glad that Brooke was the one who took the reins and said, no, we're digging into this, you know, and we are going to figure this out ourselves. So I am glad about that. But it did seem very like neat, like a neat little bow.
Yeah.
For a very messy situation.
I would argue that Brooke taking the reins and helping Peyton find her power again is the least Brooke can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After the way she's treated Peyton for the last year. Like, yes, obviously, Brooke also just went through this traumatic experience, but it's clearly not affecting her as poorly as it is Peyton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like, Brooke is sleeping and showering, as you know, that's
right.
Like, the difference between the two of them and how they're coping.
Yeah.
So, like, just the fact that, like, doing this for Peyton and being the security blanket that she needed to go and confront Ian for good was, like, I think it was the least Brooke could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I like the fact, too, that it's not something like this wasn't the next episode after the attack. They let it breathe for a couple weeks, 2 weeks before they did this, because I would have felt it been really like, yeah, nice, neat, clean little bow had they done it literally. Oh, next week we're going to resolve it and it's going to be done. No, they let us like steep with it for a week or two with it. But still, I get, you know, nice little neat thing. But that's also that's television, which sucks. But
yeah.
So then we go to Nathan and Haley and they are in bed as Nathan tells her he can't believe Lucas did that he admitted. He lied that he's the one who did the point shaving, but he's not going to feel guilty about Lucas taking the blame because no one asked him to do this. And then Haley says, well, that's not true, Nathan, because I asked him to, and now I feel really guilty and this all sucks. Which then in turn makes Nathan feel guilty and apologize for everything again. And Haley tells him that she understands since, you know, every dream he's ever wanted is about to come true. And Nathan realizes that he can't just stand back and let this happen because he has to come clean. Because if he doesn't, he's no better than Dan.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
And he says it's going to be hard, but he will have Haley and his son no matter what. And he says that he admires the people most who create their lives after their dreams fall apart, something that his father could never do.
Ooh, yeah.
We then immediately cut to Dan, who is drinking at Keith's grave.
Mid-mental breakdown, Dan Marjorie then, Scott.
Where he then drops the bottle of booze all over Keith's grave, soaking it in booze. And then apparently Dan started smoking, but then drops the lighter or the cigarette, I couldn't tell which one, and sets Keith's grave on fire. What the fuck?
You want to talk about heavy-handed metaphors for a minute?
I mean, shitty-ass writer from L.A. Dear God, I can't. It's just so dramatic and not in, like, a good way.
So wild. I did love it, though. I cackled. I cackled so hard. I'm like, yes.
Because, I mean, yes. What else can you do?
Right?
Because, quite frankly, even though, like, the scene itself was unhinged and hilarious just because of the fact that it happened at all and was written, but also, you can't help but laugh at Dan's mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Because, he really thought he was going to get away with murdering his brother.
Fully. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He fully thought that he was going to get away with it. And it's just like, he now has truly realized that that is not going to happen. And it's really glorious to witness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If only this mental breakdown had stuck, you know?
Yeah.
Like, would have been great.
Yes. Okay. So I just had to look and see who wrote this shitty ass episode.
Was it He Who Must Not Be Named?
Yes.
Oh my God.
But like, also, I had to look and see, I'm like, was this like some poor, like first time person's like writing thing of like, we're going to give the new guy a chance. And then it's like, nope, sorry, dude, you can't do this. No, it was He Who Must Not Be Named who wrote this fucking episode. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now?
Also, knowing that all the shit that Ian says to Peyton
makes a lot of sense.
Makes so much more sense.
It makes it grosser.
Uh-huh. Like,
oh,
I hate this. Ugh. I hate it. I hate it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so heavy-handed. Anyway,
what happens after Danny's mental breakdown, Brody?
Yes, then.
Nothing. End of season, end of show. Throw it in the garbage.
Just end on a fire in a graveyard.
Yeah.
Okay, great, great. Series wrap, everybody. It's fine.
Series wrap on.
No, sorry, Jesse. Hate to break it to you, honey. You still got, I don't know, what, four seasons to go? Five seasons to go. Five seasons to go. It's fine. It's fine. You're fine. You're fine. It's me reassuring you, Jesse. You're fine.
Okay.
Then we go to Lucas, who he's walking to the river court and he sees Abby there where she says, open your eyes, Lucas. And we find out it's a dream, but he wakes up to find Abby actually in his room. I guess he's not the only one. Abby's mom is not the only one who doesn't lock doors because she just waltzed right into his room. And she apologizes first for lying to him and she needs to talk to him. And she tells him she got scared and ran the day of the shooting when Jimmy let her go. But she was worried about the others and even more so Jimmy, because she looked in his eyes and saw how scared he actually was. And so she came back and ducked into that office when everything happened. And she noticed she then tells Lucas that Keith tried to talk to Jimmy, but Jimmy shot himself first. And she tells him Keith was still alive when Jimmy died. And then Abby says she thought if the person knew, someone else knew what he'd done, he would turn himself in, but he found her and it's too late. And Lucas asks her again, who killed Keith? And Abby tells him it was his father. It was Dan. And Lucas tells her she has to come forward and tell someone. And she says she did. She told him and she apologizes and leaves. Again, the most unhinged thing ever. Like, this entire episode is unhinged.
Mm. Yeah, it's just. Yeah. I mean, I get it, you know, like, but also.
But also, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get not wanting to come forward alone, at least. Yeah. But if they get a few people together, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, she's the one who witnessed what happened. And I get kind of her mother's thinking about this is that's the mayor of Tree Hill, arguably one of the most powerful people in the entire town. And my daughter is just going to say that, oh, no, he killed his brother. Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's I get the fact that they all think it's an insurmountable mountain to climb.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Absolutely.
Yes. So then the next day, the reporters are trying to get into school for the press conference. And Nathan finds Whitey and admits to him that it was him who did the point shaving. And he says he's sorry. And Whitey says, so is he, more than you'll ever know.
And Whitey says, son, you think I don't know that?
Pretty much. Yeah. 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 Then Nathan goes out for the press conference and makes the statement that he did shave points and that he's deeply regretful that he betrayed the game, his teammates, Whitey, everybody that he loves. And makes that lovely statement in a much longer speech. But basically Nathan admits, yes, he point shaved and he's very sorry about it. Great. Moving on.
Good speech.
It was a very good speech. If you haven't watched the episode, go watch it and fast forward to this part because that's really the only good part of the entire episode. I said it. Don't care. Then we go to the montage moments where we see Ian looking at a picture of Maggie and him in jail. Don't know how he got that photo in jail, but great. Peyton coming home to Brooke, having redecorated their room to look like Peyton's room. And she tells her she knows she loved her room and it might have been taken from her, but they're going to take it back, which I loved. Nathan sitting alone at the river court. Lucas visiting Keith's extra crispy gravestone.
Deep fried.
Extra crispy.
Broiled headstone. God. Dan Scott's specialty.
Dear God. Then Dan sneaks into Lucas's house and sees the picture of Lucas and Keith. Lucas goes to see Abby, but he finds out their house is empty and that they're gone. And then the final scene is Karen finds Dan in Lucas's room. He admits that he's done horrible things. He breaks down in front of her and he admits that Lucas didn't need a father. He had a father in Keith. And Dan admits that he destroys everything he touches. Karen tries to tell him that he can be redeemed, but Dan disagrees. He wishes he could breathe again from this nightmare that he's in. And he tells Karen how much he wishes he could have stayed with her before. And he knows that he lost her forever. And then Lucas comes into his room to find Karen and Dan kissing in his room. And the episode ends. Fuck this episode.
In his room.
How dare they? Okay. What did we think, kids?
Boo.
I hate this episode. I hate this episode. God, I don't know if I have anything good to say except for the fact of good for Peyton and Brooke. For dealing with their trauma in a positive way and moving past it. I love that part. Everything else can go fuck itself. I get why we're doing this, but God damn it. I hate how they're doing it. Anything else we want to add before we wrap this up or are we done, kids?
I have one thing that I meant to say way, way a long time ago, but I didn't.
Let her rip, Tater Chip.
I'm sorry. What did you just say?
I just said, let her rip, Tater Chip.
Okay, so
Brody just got back from Missouri, if anyone can't tell. I did,
it's fine.
So, okay, this was something that I've, like, wanted to, like, discuss since 316, but I couldn't bring it up during 316 because it's kind of a joke, and 316 is not a joke. Did y'all watch Drake and Josh at all?
Quite a bit.
Nope.
Okay, so Abby is the actress who plays Josh's girlfriend in Drake and Josh.
Oh my God.
And it's like, and she's like, she's like the other like smart kid in school. They're like rivals and it's like an enemies to lovers type situationship. And that's all I can think about every time I see her on screen.
Oh my every God.
Time. Yep.
Okay. That's why she looked like vaguely familiar, but I couldn't put my hand.
It's because Josh's girlfriend on Drake and Josh.
And she's been on tons of other like teen shows that. She's one of those actresses who like made her entire career out of being on early 2000s teen dramas. And then I don't know if she's done much else, but yeah.
But that is where I would argue in terms of the early 2000s that she's probably most known for.
Yeah.
And it's all I can think about every time she's on screen. It's like, where's Josh Peck?
It's so funny. Oh my God.
That was all I have to add.
There we go.
I loved it.
So anything else we want to add before we wrap this up? No. Good. Great. Yes. No, maybe.
No, what? No,
no. Okay. Speak now forever. Hold your peace.
Go for it.
Thank you all so much for listening. As always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us out in the long run. If you rate us 5 stars, it helps with the algorithms, all that fun stuff. If you want to interact with us more, follow us on social media. We are everywhere. You can find social media at On Wednesdays Pod. If you have a question, comment, concern, and you don't have a carrier pigeon, because we haven't done that joke in a while, hit us up in the Instagram DMs, because that's usually where we're around most often, or send us an email. We're at onwednesdayspod@gmail.com. And yeah, we will see you guys next week for another fabulous, fun-filled episode of On Wednesdays We Watch One Tree Hill. We'll see you guys next week. Bye!
Bye!
I don't even have a funny thing for this at the end because this episode just sucked.
Stupid LA writers.
There it is!